Stop me if you heard this one before. Cowboys embroiled in an absurd controversy. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Real news, Pearl, though, with the Cowboys at Dak Prescott. It's finally official. He is going to get surgery today on the hamstring. Jerry Jones saying it's an injury that is seen more in hockey players than football players.
What? How would Jerry know that? Anyway, but I did not hear that. That doesn't make any sense.
It didn't make a lot of sense.
Why
to me
would a
either,
hockey player have his hamstring come off the bone? Like what? Anyway,
I think it's just maybe was it the severity of it? But they said the prognosis is good, but he will not be back until next season. And obviously, the team may look a lot different when Dak eventually does come back, because Mike McCarthy's kind of fighting maybe like a two-prong battle here. The first was some Micah Parsons comments that we had played for you earlier this week about whether or not, you know, veterans on the team were working harder than the coaching staff. Got that all squared away, just a miscommunication. The latest thing now is the Sun and how it goes into Cowboys to AT&T Stadium. Cowboys. Nobody's shutting up about the Sun. In fact, it's become an even bigger story, Perloff, and I'll give you some sound as to why. So the sunlight coming in, interfering with a CeeDee Lamb. I don't even know if that would have been a touchdown. The throw was so weird. But CeeDee Lamb asked if there should be curtains put up in AT&T Stadium to help with the sun. And he said 1,000% absolutely. Now, Jerry Jones is not doing that, because he said the sunlight is a home field advantage.
Usually, and that's the case with us, that if there's a field, and so usually, and that's the case with us, that if there's a field, or in the case it's your home field, which it is of the Dallas Cowboys, it should be an advantage to the home team. So I don't want to adjust it for one reason, is because it is an advantage to us.
But is it, though, when your star receiver doesn't like it? Now, Jerry goes on to say more, and this is why I say that Mike McCarthy is, like, you know, kind of fighting things from all angles. Jerry Jones goes on, this is on 105.7 The Fan in Dallas, obviously, about the Cowboys have to game plan for the Sun, noting that Kellen Moore, the former offensive coordinator, had no problem with it.
Well, we do. We basically do. We get a big time reports where that sun is going to be during the course of a game. Kellen Moore knew about it. He spent, I'm sure he spent a lot of time, their coordinator who used to be here, I'm sure he spent a lot of time planning and thinking about where the sun was going to be. Mm-hmm. He should.
Now, no matter whether you thought Micah Parsons was taking a shot at Mike McCarthy, that's taking a shot at Mike McCarthy. And if you want to excuse Jerry's behavior or whatever, say it doesn't matter, that's taking a shot at your head coach, because when Mike McCarthy came to Dallas, he insisted, Jerry Jones insisted, that Kellen Moore remain as the offensive coordinator. And it was only 2 years ago Kellen Moore was ousted, went to the Chargers, now is with your Philadelphia Eagles. Clearly there's a pining for Kellen Moore.
Yeah, Jerry did not like Kellen Moore coming in with the Eagles and kicking their butt. You know, I think I didn't really see that as much of a rip, because McCarthy was amazing at home last year. So, and he was calling plays and they went undefeated at home. So clearly Jerry actually has some legitimacy to what he's saying. It has been a home field advantage lately, because for a long time under Garrett, they were not dominant at home. It was bizarre. You would have thought they would be, but now McCarthy's been incredible in Dallas Stadium. I just think it's a sign the whole team stinks. It doesn't matter if you're home or away. I'm not going to play. If you watch that game like that, the sun was not the main problem. The lack of a quality team was a much bigger problem.
Well, sure. But here's my thing about this, right? Even if CeeDee Lamb's making excuses, if a player is telling you this could interfere, right, or it's making the degree of difficulty just a little bit harder, why be so indignant? Like, you know, if you're calling it a home court advantage, he's like, it's like knowing dead spots on the hardwood.
Yeah.
But not really for your team this time around.
You enter the season winning like 18 out of your last 19 games there. You can't possibly say like they needed to change anything before this year.
Okay, but why not when every team's just trying to gain an advantage and gain an edge?
Right, right.
And so your star player, the only skill position player that matters for the Cowboys right now, wants the curtains up. Why not just do it?
Fine, but to say that this is in the top 100 reasons the Cowboys are in trouble now is a mistake. Because honestly, something like the guy I defended, who stuck up for Cooper Rush, couldn't hit the side of a barn yesterday. He was underthrowing everyone. I think he was scared of the pressure or something. Like this is, they did not lose because of the sun. Let's just make that clear. I feel like people are talking about this game as if these giant shades were up, that it was going to be more competitive. It was not. They have not been a competitive team in any way this year.
Well, I think there's a little bit of LOL Cowboys to this, because in the room where Mike McCarthy does his, I'm assuming, pregame and postgame press conferences, but definitely the postgame press conferences, it's glass walls.
So, by the way, actually, was this the postgame one, or was this in Frisco?
There's a place
where
Mike McCarthy stands at a podium. And it's got glass walls. And the sun beats into the room, apparently. So what have they done? They put up a shade. They will do it for McCarthy talking to the media, but won't do it when a player is saying, this is getting in my eyes.
Why?
And it's funny, because Jerry, in that interview on The Fan in Dallas, does say, this happened to Jason Witten. he mentions other times, like, sometimes you got to stare right into the sun and make a catch. It's like, do you, though?
I think it's kind of brilliant now that I understand there was a strategic reason behind it. Apparently, like, that makes me excited about Kellen Moore. Kellen Moore was calling plays around the sun. We love it when they do it in baseball and basketball and football. I mean, in baseball, like, teams, like, remember the St. Louis Cardinals used to have this gigantic stadium where the walls were so far back? So it neutralized all the incoming home run hitters. Like, this is actually probably the smartest thing Jerry Jones has ever done.
Even though it's currently backfiring on his current team?
He came in on fire. No, see, that's the thing. This has nothing to do with why they're so bad. The sun is like, it's not backfiring. Like, it wouldn't matter. Honestly, if CeeDee Lamb had caught that touchdown, they still lose by 20 points. Who cares? It's not the sun. The sun was their best friend.
So why not?
And also, that throw was about 8 yards behind him.
Right, right. So why did he say Kellen Moore knew how to navigate the sun, and he's not like Mike McCarthy knows how to navigate the sun? Because it's not a problem.
Because he's Jerry. I don't know.
Okay.
But Jerry, McCarthy was 8-0 at home last year, Maggie. It seems like he knew how to call around the sun then.
Big Dave is in Kentucky. Good morning, Big Dave.
Just for clarity, the Cowboys suck ass in the sunshine and the rain.
Yeah. They could be in the middle of the night in a pitch black field, and they're still going to lose 31-3.
And Jerry Jones is getting crazier by the day. Who else would build a $1 billion stadium and the sun's an issue and the damn scoreboard's too low? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable. But what I want to know is, why are we talking about all this frivolous stuff? Well, there was a basketball game in Catlanta last night. Y'all haven't spent nearly enough time talking about this morning.
Well, let's do it right now. I said Kentucky, I thought they were going to give Cooper Flagg their best shot. Now, he did have, 26 points, but they locked him up in the last two possessions of the game. Nah. Kentucky wins the basketball game. Big Dave, this is huge for Mark Pope.
It is huge. No way in hell that John Calipari wins this ball game. But let me explain to you why. Second half, he made two primary adjustments that just changed the entire course of the game. He went small, and he moved Andrew Carr to the five position. Mm-hmm. And they ran three different ball screen defenses in the second half that just totally took Duke out of the rhythm and allowed them to stop penetrating and getting to the rim. It was just fantastic. Listen, arguably our best player, Jackson Robinson, only had 1 point last night. He was a non-factor, so everything's great in the bluegrass state this morning.
Dave, is this like the opposite team of the Calipari teams? They're all old and big, and they're not skinny 17-year-olds running around out there. Like, why are they 19? They look big and talented to me. I'm totally on board here.
Absolutely. You're right, McLovin, as usual. They are. And not only that, it's not just the size and the physical maturity, but they're all experienced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got players from they're one of the most experienced teams in the country. And listen, Duke's got a great ball team, and Cooper Flagg is he's great. He's immature, super raw talent. But I tell you, Mark Pope, a lot being made that he's never won an NCAA game. But I'm telling you, I'm not just being a fanboy here. I mean, for anyone that actually watches and digests the game, you can see, mm-hmm. I mean, the brilliance behind Mark. I mean, he has a purpose for everything that he does. And his second half in-game adjustments were huge.
You know, Dave, I heard, and then I went and looked it up, about the certain transfers that Kentucky brought in, like Lamont Butler, mm-hmm. who we may remember from the San Diego State Aztecs, who went to the Final Four, but was the Mountain West Defensive Player of the Year. And he's not the only former defensive player, like a guy who's gotten defensive awards at a previous stop, who's now coming to Kentucky. It's a great game plan.
Yeah. I love
Amari
Williams.
Amari Williams was a two-time defensive player in the Mountain West, maybe. So, yeah, you're absolutely right, Max.
Thanks, Dave.
Dave, appreciate you.
One thing that during the telecast, they were talking a lot. Nobody had ever played together. The entire team, not a single guy had ever passed the ball to another guy on the team. They did all these team bonding events, like bowling and stuff like that.
Doesn't every team do that?
Apparently, they took it to life. Like, literally, every single player is new to the team. Nobody had ever played with each other. I think we should do these team bonding events, whatever Kentucky did, because they look great. I don't know what they were. Like, I think they played, like, capture the flag. And it was, like, summer camp there, non-basketball things, where I would think just get them on the court together so they find out who each other is. But
Amari Williams played at Drexel before this.
So, Colonial Athletic.
The CAA.
Philadelphia.
So... you've never heard of this before?
No. Well, that was they mentioned at least five times last night about all the special offseason programs that they did. This was not normal.
I know, but I feel like I hear teams go and trade with the Navy SEALs. I hear teams, you know, do all these lots of bonding stuff before. Did they really do something different? A couple rounds of bowling is not going to...
It seemed like they did it more than most.
Well, that's what the guys were talking about.
Like, this was a extended process.
But it's just very unusual to have an entire team that's new.
Like, yeah, it's 12 guys.
I'm not even sure, has that ever happened where a team has had not a single player who's ever played with each other?
I mean, I think maybe Baylor when Scott Drew got there. Like, you know,
in the AAU age, though, is that... Yes, it might still be rare, but... This is the AAUification of basketball, right? You're just on different teams, and you go around playing all the time, and no one stays together.
Meanwhile, Cooper Flagg, all that being said, like, I can't believe he was definitely the best player on the court last night. Like,
yeah, but he choked it away.
Yeah.
Did you read Manny's tweet?
If you watch that game, though, oh, my God, like, we got to watch this guy.
He's gonna be really good. And it's crazy that he's doing this without a jump shot, basically, or at least a three-point shot.
He's got a mid-range shot, right?
Yeah, mid-range you can shoot, but three-pointer he's got to work on.
But he was going up against guys 4 years older than him and taking him to school.
I had to remind myself every time someone scored on him, like, well, that guy's 23. Like, you know, I can't get too mad that this guy scored on him in his play, you know.
Who's the more impressive 17-year-old? Cooper Flagg of Duke or Ryan Williams, the wide receiver from Alabama, who also is not old enough to vote?
What a freak.
Poll question.
What a freak. Well,
remember, Cooper Flagg was playing with the USA select team that was taking on Team USA as a tune-up to the Olympics.
Joel Embiid.
The NBA guys were like, this guy's good.
But Ryan Williams is out here catching touchdown passes against LSU.
You know, we haven't heard, you know, Ryan Williams is not, I felt like he started off the season like fire. But now he's not quite as big as he was. He was in the Heisman race, where Cooper Flagg, I think, is the entire sport now.
Well, yeah, Williams, maybe the high point was probably after the Georgia win?
Yeah, wherever that crazy catch he had, right. But Cooper Flagg is like Zion Williamson was at Duke in 2019. Like, this is it's very rare that we have a college basketball superstar. He's like Caitlin Clark right now for the sport, but not that big.
Not that big.
No. But... it's funny, like, that's the guy you tune into. Like, name this, who's the second, I mean, EJ, like, who's the second biggest star in college
basketball?
We
saw Hunter Dickinson, and he looks like he's about 100 compared to everyone else.
Colk Brennan.
Yeah.
Who's the second biggest star?
It's probably Hunter Dickinson. That's who I would go with. This year, I think, is more about teams and then Cooper Flagg. I think there are a lot of really good teams, better than last year. I don't think you'll have a UConn just mauling everybody. I think it's a lot more even, and then it's going to be the year of Cooper Flagg.
He's not Caitlin.
No.
My mom's not tuning in to see Cooper Flagg.
No. But I think, like, right now you could say, like, Caitlin is, like, a person who transcends their sport. Cooper Flagg is transcending college basketball right now. Like, it's really, like...
I think he's just a good college basketball player at this moment.
Totally disagree. Like, 100% disagree. Like, he is the singular star of the sport.
I think give this a couple months, Maggie. I think he's going to be a huge
story. Give it a couple months, but not right this second. If we went out on the street and asked 10 people who consider themselves sports fans, do you know Cooper Flagg or Caitlin Clark? It's not even close.
No, but that's not the point at all. Yeah, of course, Caitlin Clark. I'm not saying like he's just like just by far and away way more famous than the second most famous player in the sport.
I'll give you that. 855-212-4227. Okay, lots to do here. It's Wednesday, which means the great debate. The great debate today, what is the greatest boxing match of all time? And you may be wondering, why would we pick that today? It's the middle of football season, basketball. It's because Mike Tyson is fighting Friday night against Jake Paul. That will not be the greatest boxing match of all time. We can guarantee it. However, we want to hear from you, the greatest boxing match of all time. It's Maggie and Perloff.
I want to eat his children.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. Great debate Wednesday. Today's topic, greatest boxing match of all time. I went with Ali Frazier 1, the fight of the century. Maggie?
I went with the Rumble of the Jungle. That'd be Ali against George Foreman, the beginning of the rope-a-dope.
Yep. Manny?
Canelo, Triple G, the second edition.
EJ?
I went with Hagler Hearns.
And I'll speak for Andrew Bogish, Ward Gatti 1.
Yeah. Poor Bogish. He's like, I got the last pick. But that was a classic fight.
Yeah, I mean, a great trilogy.
Hey, do we have that poll up, EJ? What's winning that? I have no idea.
It's a great question. And we do have the poll up, so I can ask you guys or tell you guys the results. So coming in at number one is Ali Frazier 1 at 42%.
Okay.
Then you got Hagler Hearns at 28%. And tied at 14% are Ali Foreman and Ward Gatti. So Triple G and Canelo didn't make it because of a young age.
What? Recency.
No, you didn't have space recency on the poll.
Yeah, I mean, again, Elon, if you're listening, please make this five things so I can put all five results on there.
No, he's.
If Elon's listening, we got a lot of other things to bring up.
No, no, he's. Isn't he the new efficiency czar? Which is ironic because there's two efficiency czars now, which is caused right. A lot of.
Incredibly efficient.
Vivek and Elon are the efficiency czars, but there are two of them. Anyway,
yeah,
I digress. And,
by the way, the amount that we pay for Twitter premium, certainly they're not doing a great job with their own product in efficiency. And yeah, I'll put my name to that. Kevin is in Arizona. Kevin, what's the greatest boxing match of all time?
Morning, guys.
Hey.
Years ago, I was home one day. I had strange days off. And it was like a regular channel, and it was a Boom Boom Mancini against that, I think, that Korean guy, Kim, or whatever.
Yeah.
And those guys just went at it. I mean, they just, as soon as the bell rung, they went in the center of the ring and just started, you know, beating the hell out of each other. Going, Jesus Christ, someone's not going to laugh at this fight because they were just throwing, like the Hearns fight, and they were just throwing roundhouses hits, and then, and they're all full of blood, and then they come up the second, round and do the same thing all over again. And that's when Boom Boom Mancini knocked the guy out, and he passed away in the hospital.
Yeah, sad.
Because he hit him so hard. I mean, those guys were just going crazy. I'm going like, wow, I've seen a lot of fights in my day. I never saw a fight like this. It was crazy.
Yeah, Kevin, I mean, one of the most tragic moments in the history of sports, and actually a lot of reforms were made in boxing after that happened, that tragedy of Dokkyu Kim passing away after that fight. And, I mean, we're talking about greatest fights of all time. I don't think this would apply because of how tragic the ending was. Nadal is in Dallas. Good morning, Nadal.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We're great.
Good, good. Hey, Rock Chalk Jayhawk, right? Great win against Michigan State. And I was rooting for Kentucky against Duke because Duke historically has done more damage to us than Kentucky. So
wait, so you're a Michigan State fan?
No, I'm a KU alum.
I'm a Kansas fan. Okay.
Yeah. I'm just saying that Duke has historically done more damage to us than Kentucky. So I was rooting for Kentucky, that's all.
Love it.
But it was a great game all around, and as far as the boxing thing goes, hold on. Somebody just showed up in my car. Hold on. Hey, Maggie Perloff. Hey, man, you know, this is a champ, man. You know, they let me, I had to get out of my breakfast with Howard Cosell, you know. And they said, hey, man, if you want to leave heaven, you better be back by 7.
So, hey, I got limited time, man. And you better choose me in your survey and your rankings, brother, you know? Because Howard keeps using these big words on me. He still says, hey, Muhammad, you are still truculent. I say, hey, man, I still don't know what that word means, but if it's good, I'm it, man, you know?
Nadal, love it. Can you do Tyson, please?
No, I have to work on that, brother. Hey, Perloff. I have to tell you this, brother.
Snaps for Nadal for doing the Muhammad Ali impersonation.
Perloff, two nights ago, I was on YouTube and on the Dan Patrick show with because I love Frank Caliendo. And there you were, brother. There you were.
Yeah, I used to be on the Dan Patrick show with Frank Caliendo. I love that guy.
Yeah, it was great, man. But, hey, you know, everybody, you know, these Cowboys fans are losing faith, man. You got to have faith in God, you know.
Yeah,
God,
Caliendo better. He's going to lose his job to you. This is, dude, you got.
No, man, no. Hey, man. You know, these Cowboys fans, you know, everybody, you got to have faith, man. I was scared, man. I was scared all my life, man. Everybody talk about George Foreman, George Frazier, you know. I fought them all, brother. You know, I beat them all. Jerry Corey. They sent me even to Germany. Fought that Kaiser fella. I don't even remember his name. I'm still pretty, Perloff. And not a mark to my face, man. Not a mark to my face. Isn't that something? Isn't that something? I'm still fast in heaven, brother. You know, I hit the light switch and I'm in the bed before the room gets dark. Now that's fast, you know.
Nadal, well done. That's what the show was missing this morning.
Impressions are great.
I mean, the first half.
I'm actually surprised you don't have an Ali. You don't have a Tyson.
No,
you have
Tyson. You need the high voice.
You have a Berman.
I can do Frank Caliendo.
You have Berman on the toilet. You have. Cam
By the way,
Smith
you
poorly.
Know where I got my Berman from?
Yeah, here we go.
Caliendo does two. He does Berman and Madden with no words. Like, that's his famous. He's like, you don't really. He's like, Madden, you just say random sounds. And then Berman. Caliendo, I've seen Caliendo do 2 minutes of Berman without saying a word. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
I love that Nadal called and said, I was watching Dan Patrick's show, and guess who showed up? You were there for 12 years.
Yeah. By the way, if you want a good time, go look at any old Frank Caliendo and Joey Molinari, too. Those guys are amazing. That, by the way, that Ali was good. Thought it went on a little too long, Nadal. Well, I know you're listening. We got it. We understood. You got to then follow it up with another box.
Well, I think he needed to go long. The first 30 seconds were, I think, a little rough. I was like, what are we doing? And then when he got to Cosell, he hit his groove.
Yeah.
I think truculent
got him. And then the hey man. Yeah.
Then when he came back and said, I fought the Kaiser, then I was
then
on.
Then we were rolling.
I felt like I was with Ali.
Tyson's a harder one.
No one here can do Tyson. No, there you go. Yeah, that's
go
it.
Go ahead, Maggie. What was that?
I'm going to eat his kids.
Yeah.
It's only because I'm the woman on the show. My voice is just generally higher.
I want to eat his children.
I don't have the lisp. All right. Bogish headlines. Save us.
Headlines. I love Bryce Harper. Can't do it. Sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your family, your phone, your furry friends with Life electronic device and pet health insurance. Loss number two, dropping Georgia from third to 12th. Loss number one, dropping Miami from fourth to ninth in the new CFP rankings revealed last night. The Hurricanes would still get a first-round bye as the ACC rep, but the Bulldogs actually fall out of the bracket because number 13 Boise State needs a spot as the highest-ranked Group of Five team. Those Broncos would play at Ohio State in round one. There's also Ole Miss, Penn State, Alabama, Indiana, and Notre Dame, Tennessee as well. Oregon, Texas, BYU would have the other first-round buys. Off the field, USC fined $50,000, placed on a year's probation for breaking some coaching rules during the previous two seasons. The Trojans were letting analysts coach players on and off the field. That is not allowed. Number six, Duke losing last night, 77-72 to Kentucky in the Champions Classic in Atlanta, outscored by 14 in the second half. John Shire's team once again dealing with cramps.
It's concerning. I think part of it is, we have young bodies. I think that's part of it, where we got to help these guys. And And so, obviously, that's something we got to take a hard look at.
This goes back to their game Friday night, a win over Army when Cooper Flagg missed most of the second half because he was cramping. Flagg last night, 26 points and 12 boards, but two big turnovers in the final seconds, helping the Wildcats get this win. That was the nightcap in Atlanta. Top-ranked Kansas won the opener, 77-69 over Michigan State. That's win number 591 for Bill Self with the Jayhawks, passing Fog Allen for the most in program history. If you missed the first hour of the show, this is why Maggie's mad at Steph Curry.
Curry gets Lively again.
He wants a three.
Yes, he does. Backs up, shoots a deep three over Lively. It's good! It's good! The Warriors lead by four with 26.4 to go.
Tim Roy on Warriors Radio. Curry with the night-night three scored Golden State's last 12 points, 37 total in a 120-117 win over the Mavs, spoiling Klay Thompson's return to the Bay Area.
It was a really cool experience. I appreciate the fans very much. The captain's hat ended up being a great touch. So I'm such a passionate boater, and saw a lot of familiar faces in the crowd. That was a warm-hearted feeling.
Yes, the fans got captain's hats because Klay used to boat across the bay to games.
I mean, a more efficient method of traveling around the Bay Area, I think, is literally by boat. And I think he's right. There's only two types of people who like to be on boats. You either love it, it's your life, or you could take it or leave it.
Also, one of the number one signs of a midlife crisis when you buy a boat.
You think so?
Oh, well, right. Yes.
And he's saying,
you know someone personally who did this?
My fiance's father may have done this.
Got it.
Oh. Isn't there a saying like the best and worst day of boat ownership is like the best day is like the when you sell it?
The day you buy it and the day you sell it.
Yeah, because it's always a bad experience, right?
Well, it just becomes a lot of work. Pain, but if you love it, like Greg Giannotti down the hall with Boomer and Geo, he lives for it.
He's got a boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's always wearing sailor shirts and stuff.
You thought that was just
no
a
idea. I thought he was obsessed with golf. I didn't know he
no,
boated.
That too.
He loves that as well.
My cousin's like this. He loves boating. He has loved it for his whole life. Luckily he lives in Miami, Florida. But yeah, what's your father-in-law's boat called?
Oh, I mean, he doesn't have it anymore. He sold it. Sold it before I even met Andrea.
So he had the midlife crisis, got over it.
Yeah, Andrea is just one of the things that she's like, that damn boat.
To be fair, of all the midlife crises, that one's not so bad.
Well, the question, though, is once you buy the boat, do you force your kids to, like, actually maintain it? Because that was her issue.
Terrible.
Why do you think you have kids?
Because she thought it was like, okay, I'm just going to chill on the boat. And he was like, no, get the sails and wrap the stuff around.
Oh,
get the
ropes
ready. I think it was.
Ooh, you got to know what you're
doing. It was a real boat.
Yeah, that's his mistake.
Barely you know a lot about the boat. You weren't sure if it was a sailboat or a motorized vehicle.
Was it on water or off water?
Sure, it was motorized, but
it was a tub.
I heard there was a lot of work that was involved that was not expected.
Incredibly, it had wheels as well.
Yeah,
I got to tell you, if I get super, super rich somehow, seems unlikely, I'm totally in the yacht crowd. I love a yacht. Maggie, like, that's not a boat. Would you guys, I watch a lot of yacht shows, and you know how
I want to go on below deck. How's that happen?
I want to be the person being served on below deck. Yes. Yeah.
People get served on below deck, all right.
Oh, I hear. Oh, good line. but don't you guys, like, when the NFL owners all own yachts, don't you guys want to be in that crowd?
Yeah, well, Dan Snyder has to be in international waters to avoid the feds.
You know, one NFL person that hates yachts, Bill Belichick. Because he went on a yacht and didn't get a job.
Oh, right.
Oh.
Another guy leased a yacht?
Yeah.
Ironically?
Well, Tom Brady went on a yacht and cost him a first-round pick.
Brian Flores.
The New York Giants haven't been good since being on a boat.
I was on a NFL owner's yacht. Have I told this story? Do you know who it was?
I do, but if you want everyone
Shad Khan.
To guess.
I told you. Yeah, Shad Khan's yacht. There was Louis Vuitton, like, real leather in the bathroom on the walls. Instead of wallpaper, it had Louis Vuitton leather. Yeah. True story.
Wait, just reminded me of something. We need another Perloff story before the show is over. Because Bogish doesn't know it, and Manny might not even know who we're talking about, but he
probably
can Google
not.
Her.
I don't know. I feel like it has to come up more organically.
It couldn't have come up more organically. Perloff has a Barbra Streisand story, and the reason why Babs came up is because today's great debate, the greatest boxing match of all time, and you picked Ali Frazier 1, and then you just listed off all the celebrities who were at this fight of the century, and one was Barbra Streisand. And Manny said, who?
Whomst.
And Manny said, whomst?
Still don't have a clear answer.
Barbara Streisand.
I feel like Barbara Streisand, for like this generation, is more of someone who's famous for being famous.
Yeah, she's an icon. But anyway, yeah. I mean,
want to save it for the last segment?
Yeah, sure. I mean, honestly, you're overhyping. You're overhyping it, I think.
No shot.
It's also been like, there's been short films made about this experience. There's actually an action figure of me doing this. Like, it was played out pretty good at Dan Patrick's show,
but
to be honest.
Two people who've never heard it.
I told it 5 times on this show. Bogus obviously doesn't listen to me. I can't believe you don't know this story already.
You have not told it during the morning era of this
You've
show.
You've never told on the
Manny
morning
Manny doesn't
era.
Know Thank anything you. That happened. Manny apparently gained consciousness in the year 2022. He has no idea what happened before. Like, he's
Manny's
like,
AI.
That was pre-COVID? Pre-COVID, huh? Or the dinosaurs roaming the earth back in 2012?
History began when George W. Bush was in office.
That strike, their first presidential.
I'm surprised you've heard of W.
Oh yeah, big Walker guy.
Because of the fastball.
Big time, yeah, right down the middle.
The fastball, yada yada yada. Okay, folks, finish it out, and then we'll get the Barbara Streisand story in a minute.
Am I not done? I forgot. The Suns won in Utah 121-12 behind 31 from Devin Booker. The Bucks a rare win, 99-85 over the Raptors. And the Sixers lost to the Knicks 111-99. Despite Joel Embiid making his season debut, he scored just 13 points, hit just 2 of 11 shots. All of that action from the glorious return of the NBA Cup. And lastly, the Winnipeg Jets are the first NHL team ever to start 15-1 after a 6-3 win at the Rangers. All right, take it away, Babs.
Okay. Let's take a quick break.
Yes.
We're going to update our polls. I also have another sports question for you guys, and we'll get Perloff's story about the one and only Barbara Streisand.
The only thing is, there are still possible legal ramifications from this story. Like, it's not, I'm not out of the woods.
Stay tuned, Maggie and Perloff. Welcome back. So, Manny, let me get this straight. You didn't know who sang that song?
Listen, you put a name to a face and whatnot. You put a voice to a song. And then the puzzle's all, you know, it's like a big old puzzle piece.
There you go. Yes. Manny wasn't sure who Diana Ross was.
I recall this spicy little jam.
There you go. The reason why we're talking about celebrities like Diana Ross and Barbara Streisand and others is because we did a great debate today, as we do every Wednesday, the greatest boxing match of all time. And Perloff, you picked Ali Frazier 1,
yeah,
known shorthand as the fight of the century, and you named off all the celebrities, yeah, who happened to be in the crowd. And Manny only knew Frank Sinatra. Not familiar with Diana Ross, not familiar with Barbara Streisand. Who else?
Burt Lancaster. Likens. Yeah, I think it was Burt Lancaster, like I said, like Bill Smith or something. Yeah, so Barbara Streisand story, real quick.
Okay, wait, so yeah, that led us, yeah, to me asking if you guys had heard Perloff's Barbara Streisand, yeah, story. To which EJ, I don't think, have you heard it?
I've heard it on the show, but I don't remember it.
Okay, Manny had not heard it, and Bogus had not heard it. So Perloff, I'll give the floor to you.
I mean, it's really like, it's not anything that abnormal. Maggie's making it sound like it's like everybody doesn't do this. I think everybody does. My friend was house sitting for Barbara Streisand, and he invited me over to hang out, as one does. We were bored. I said, why don't we go into Barbara's underwear closet and put her bras on her head, Weird Science style. You know, like the movie Weird Science, which you don't know, where Gary and Wyatt put bras on their head and try and create a superwoman. We're like, let's try it with Babs's bras. And we proceeded to do that.
I don't believe this for a second.
Okay.
I do.
Why? Just out of curiosity, like, why would I make that up?
And also, how would you arrive at those details? How would he arrive at those details? And by the way, the woman was Kelly LeBrock in Weird Science.
Again, we're...
Manny doesn't know that movie
30
either.
Years away from Manny having heard of her.
Wait a minute, when did this happen? Like, what like time period? Like a year?
1962?
It was right around the turn of the millennium.
It's around the year 2000.
Wow.
So you're like an adult.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, house sitting for Barbara Streisand in high school.
I don't know. This is New York, man. People give.
But I grew up in Philly. I grew up in the suburbs of Philly.
I was saying, this was in Philly?
No,
No, it was in New York. I was living in New York.
This is New York.
I tried to recreate a superwoman at Weird Science Style until like the day I got married. Why not?
And then Sarah appeared.
You guys have never seen the movie Weird Science? It's with Anthony Michael Hall. It is hysterical.
Classic.
So impolitically correct and so stupid. These two nerds use science to create a perfect woman who then teaches them how to be men. It is it was basically, that was my best shot in high school.
Futuristic science.
Yeah. Like, I had a better chance of creating a superwoman than actually getting a date. So we thought it'd be a fun story if we did that, and we did that. And that is it, and there's no evidence of this if I'm ever pulled into court.
Is there any way, any chance this has gotten back to Barb's?
No. There is definitely no chance.
Was he ever allowed back to house it for her? I never asked you that question.
Yeah, because no one ever found out until I revealed it on the Dan Patrick show.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like she knows.
I don't think so.
No.
She had a biography came out last year. It was the number one best-selling book of the entire year of any genre, even though Manny's never heard of her. And it was not in there.
Can I ask how your friend came to be the house sitter for Barbara Streisand?
Not unless I'm in court. I can't answer that.
Okay.
He had a key, right?
Yes, he wasn't.
Like, was it a direct ask from her to him, or was there like a go-between that knew him to get him this job?
No. I don't like where this is going. I don't want to send any more details about who may or may not have been involved in this.
So one day on Dan Patrick, you were like, hey, guess what? I had Barbara Streisand's bra on my head.
Pretty much.
Honestly.
It's an amazing story.
Checks out.
I don't know how you don't believe it. I never questioned it for
11 years. There's not a detail in my life that did not. Like, we had, there's the other famous story that I've actually been, it's when I stole Charles Barkley's hat. Yep. Those are the two stories.
You have told that one here. It was out of his convertible, right?
Yeah, I took a Just Say No to Drugs hat at Charles Barkley's convertible. Felt so guilty for 20 years. I'm not a theft. I wish I was, but I was too much of a wimp to steal things. So I did this, and then I finally told Charles, I'm like, Charles, this has been on my mind for 20 years. I took a hat out of the back of your Mercedes convertible.
See, like that one I kind of understand.
Super fan, yeah.
I don't get the Streisand thing and then sharing it freely is what's making me,
I'm just glad you didn't walk away with the bra. You put it back.
You might have.
It was a bit of a statute of limitations thing.
Yeah. Oh, you had to wait?
I definitely was not sharing any time around there. Like, I had to wait a good 16 years to...
You're free and clear. It's fine.
Probably.
What was Charles Barkley doing with a just say no to drugs hat?
It was a
campaign.
It was the late 80s. I think the NBA was partnering with the Just Say No to Drugs. There was there was signage all over. It was, and I don't think Charles did drugs. I mean, he wasn't pro. You're like, what? When you said that, you didn't mean that Charles was high all the time.
I'm just saying, somebody who famously was consistently repeating, I am not a role model, suddenly had a Just Say No to Drugs
Charles,
hat.
Oh, yeah. Keep in mind, Charles said everything at some point or another.
That's definitely true.
Yeah. And so I told Charles he loved the story. He was super generous and funny about it.
Yeah. I mean, you can't really hold it against you.
Yeah. Barbara.
Babs, yeah.
If I am lucky enough to meet Babs, not sure I want to share this one with her.
Babs, funny story for you.
Yeah.
2000, you're on tour.
Right. You saw that pink lace ditty?
Calling out the details of her undergarment would be something that might land you in prison. We got poll questions up today. The greatest boxing match of all time. Right now, Perloff's choice of Ali Frazier 1 is leading 44%. Hagler Hearn, second place at 30%. I'm surprised Ali Foreman, my choice, is not getting more love. I think if we put Rumble in the Jungle, people might know it more. I don't know. They never fought a second time. It's the only time they fight. Anyway.
Well, I think you're pinned out by Ali Frazier because as big as Foreman was, like, the Ali Frazier thing was first.
That's true.
That's why when you do these great debates, whatever's first generally wins.
Ward Gatti has 11%. So there you go. We also have other things for you today, which is what's more likely to happen in Chicago? They get it right with Caleb Williams or they ruin Caleb Williams? Ruining Caleb Williams is leading at 84%.
Yeah.
And they have themselves to blame here. And the Chicago Bears, if they do end up not providing consistent coaching, consistently good offensive line and offense for Caleb Williams, this will be, we talk about choke jobs in sports. We don't generally talk about front offices, but this would be an all-time choke job of an entire organization. This is their third quarterback they've taken in the first round in the last decade. And if none of these guys pan out for the Chicago Bears, that's an epic failure for this organization.
Well, is it different than, say, the Panthers failing with Bryce Young or other number one picks who ever worked out, or the Jets with Sam Darnold? Like, isn't, that's the thing. I'm just saying, like, a lot of draft picks fail. Like, it's, we forget it's a 50-50 formula, except that Caleb Williams was so good in college. I think we thought he was a sure thing. But maybe that was a mistake. Maybe he's not a sure thing. Like, maybe there are no sure things. If you go to the wrong spot, you're in trouble. I think we labeled him savior way, way too early in Chicago. Just because he beat up the Panthers, everyone's like, well, Caleb's right behind Jaden Daniels. He beat some terrible teams early in the season. It's going to be, the next hire is so important for this team. It really is.
I bet if you took the temperature of Bears fans all around the country, I bet they don't have a lot of faith that they're going to get this hire right. And just like Jets fans wouldn't have a lot of faith that they're going to get a coaching hire right or a quarterback, you know.
But Jets fans, they always go back to the well of hope. Like, even cynical Jets fans are always like, this is the year. And Bears fans are going to be the same way. They're going to get like a Cliff Kingsbury or somebody be like, this, now it's going to happen. You know how sports is, Maggie. It's easy to go back there. If they hire one of the top three or four offensive candidates, like, there is reason to hope in Chicago, because this happened before. Like, this was the wrong coach for this year, and you knew it. I kind of knew it, and it turned out to be true.
Yeah, I just don't, I'm not giving them the benefit of the doubt of giving my hope. You know, now it's more like you got to prove it to me before I would get on board, just, you know, blind faith. And by the way, I don't know about Cliff Kingsbury. I'm not willing to say, can we get through a full season first with Jaden Daniels, first of all. And I'm not really willing to say that I would trust him a second time around. He had a losing record in college. He ended up getting unceremoniously let go by the Arizona Cardinals. And by the way, Kyler Murray is good now. And they're actually not a bad team. They're in first place in their division with Jonathan Gannon. So that doesn't bode well, in my opinion, for Kingsbury. He was with USC last year. They were one of the biggest disappointments in college football. I'm not ready to jump back on the Cliff Kingsbury bandwagon, if I was ever on it.
Yeah, I mean, Cliff, that guy can call some plays. I tell you, like, he gets the defense going the wrong way a lot. So I totally disagree with you on that. I don't know if he's a good head coach. Definitely a good play caller. And, you know, he kind of was good with Cliff. Like, his stats are pretty much the same as when he was good with Cliff.
Then why is he still coaching there?
Well, the team, by the way, the Kyler's good, but, like, the record was better with Cliff. He's, what are they, 6-4 now? They went 11-6 one year.
They did. They made the playoffs. They played the Rams, and they couldn't get in front of their own. They couldn't get past their own 30-yard line. Or was it the 49ers they played? I can't remember.
Right, but what are they now? I mean, they're 6-4, and they haven't done anything yet with Jonathan Gannon.
Right, but do you, well, maybe it's just the Arizona Cardinals are a bad franchise that stays bad. But if they had seen him as this great coach, don't you think they would have given him the benefit of the doubt of Kyler getting hurt?
Yeah, but obviously it did not work in Arizona. But that doesn't mean, like, a lot of coaches fail in the first place. I do think that Cliff will get a job and he'll be a decent offensive coach. And that's what really, like, forget being good right now. Forget the Super Bowl aspirations. Number one priority, like, I want Caleb Williams to throw 27 touchdowns. Get somebody in there. Do not hire Mike Vrabel and slow it down even more. That's all I'm saying.
Last poll question to update. Would Michael Jordan have won 6 titles if the Bulls never got Scottie Pippen? 70% of you say no.
What? It's just, first of all, the question is 6 titles. Like, would Jordan have ever won a title without Pippen? Let me ask you that. But obviously.
One title doesn't make him Michael Jordan. Titles makes him Michael Jordan.
Thank you, EJ. You're right. He's no LeBron James, who didn't need any help.
Thank you, Bogus and Kaplan. We don't.